Camouflage and Cover-Ups is brought to you by the Coming Home Well Network and Clear Right Productions. We cover unusual topics about government cover-ups, military, murders, conspiracies, and maybe even aliens. Welcome to Camouflage and Cover-Ups with Jen and Paige.
They call him Tex, the legend, Ninja Smoke, and the devil of Ramadi.
Who?
He is the deadliest sniper in American history. This is the story of the murders of former Navy SEAL Chris Kyle and his friend Chad Littlefield. I'm Jennifer.
I'm Paige.
And this is Camouflage and Cover-Ups. So welcome today. We are going to be talking, unfortunately, about the murder of a super epic dude. Have you heard of Chris Kyle?
I have, actually. Yeah, I don't know nearly all you know about it. I'm excited to learn more. But yeah, he was a pretty cool dude.
Yeah, so some of the references I'm going to use for this are from the New York Times and then some Texas newspapers and then his book. And you guys should totally go listen to his book. It's called American Sniper. You might have heard of it. There was a movie.
Yes.
With Bradley Cooper.
Yep.
Yeah, he's like famous.
Yeah, I was telling my husband we were covering this story and he's like, oh, American Sniper.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously. Yeah, duh. Everybody knows him. Duh. All right, so Christopher Scott Kyle was born on April 8th, 1974, so he's a year older than me.
Oh, wow.
And what is that, 10 years older than you?
Like 15, yeah.
Yeah, she's so young. He was born in Odessa, Texas, and was murdered on February 2nd, 2013. Mm-hmm. Stop murdering people.
I know.
From the other podcast that we do called States Exhibit, we're always telling people to stop murdering each other.
It's good advice.
Yeah. He's the older brother of him and his brother. So he's the big bro.
You're the oldest one,
I'm
right?
The oldest, too. Yeah, the oldest is the bestest.
Oh, yeah. Agreed, 100%.
So his parents are Deborah and Wayne Kyle. His mom, Deborah, was a Sunday school teacher. Oh. And his dad was a deacon. This sounds very Texas.
Yeah, I was just about to say the exact same thing. This sounds like Odessa. It sounds like anywhere in Texas.
Yep. So Chris grew up in a normal home with a normal childhood. If you count growing up on a ranch normal.
How amazing would that be?
I don't know. It sounds kind of exhausting to me.
Yeah, but I mean, I've got an 8-year-old son, and I feel like he's a big dog in a small apartment, no matter how much property we have.
Yeah, well, we can ship him off to his own ranch.
Let's do it.
Well, so Chris was an athlete, and he had lots of friends, you know, all the normal Texas stuff. And when he was 8, his dad bought him a rifle, and it was a bolt-action 30-06 Springfield rifle.
Every little boy's dream.
Yeah, we got our kids Nerf guns.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as we're going.
We did a BB gun.
Nope.
Like red rifle.
Mm-mm. Yeah. That's a hazard. And so later, after he got better at shooting, his dad bought him a little shotgun, and him and his dad would go hunting deer and pheasant and quail. And their family lived on a ranch, and Chris and his brother grew up raising like 150 head of cattle at a time.
Ooh.
You wake up the earlies.
And Odessa, Texas is not a chilly place.
It is unfriendly. Yeah. It is unfriendly. So he went to school, high school in Midlothian, Texas. And according to his autobiography, he said he ran the school. I don't know. Maybe he did. Write in if you know. So after graduating in 1992, he became what everyone does, a professional bronco rider and a ranch hand.
No way.
Yeah, you know, as one does.
That's awesome.
However, his professional rodeo career was abruptly stopped because he broke his arm and had a bunch of pins and rods and bolts.
Yep. That's like every rodeo ending.
Because gravity.
Yeah, they don't retire. They just break out.
They just fall apart.
Yeah.
Well, there goes his arm. So he decided, after his parents sort of encouraged him very hard, to go to Tarleton State University. So he went there for 2 years. That's about all he could handle, from 92 to 94. And he was like, I don't like this. So he, while he was there, he was studying ranch and range management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big degrees here in Texas.
Yep. I didn't get that degree.
Well, I didn't
manage
either.
An airport. So after a hot minute of college, he decided that he didn't like it and wanted to join the military instead. So according to his autobiography, he went into the Marine Corps recruiting station wanting to go into special operations like everyone on Earth.
They just walk in and say, this is my end goal.
I'm going to do it. Yep. Yeah. But the Marine recruiter wasn't there. So instead, the Navy guy pops his head out, and he's like, hey.
Hey, buddy.
That guy's on lunch. I guess he's missing out. You want to come on down here? Yeah. Yeah. Come on down here to the Navy instead.
Sounds like it worked out.
That actually happened to me. I wanted to be in the Marine Corps, but I... Skip forward if you don't want to hear words. Anyway, I have a vagina, and back in 1993, you couldn't have a vagina and be in intel. So there's that.
Yeah, all those women problems.
Yeah, so the Navy called me, and he was like, hey, we got intel over here that you can do. So I did it. Well, in the form of being an operations specialist. So
that's progressive.
But typically when a recruiter yells down to you, they're desperate.
Oh.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, come down. Yeah, of course you could be a Navy SEAL.
Well,
everybody's doing it.
Yeah, we'll see. We've got a wait list.
But. Yeah, you just go to boot camp, and then after that, it's magic.
Yeah.
You just turn into a SEAL.
And Navy SEAL training, from my experience of watching movies, is doesn't look
it's,
so
it
easy.
It looks like a tropical vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, however... Because he was a Bronco rider, broke his arm, had a bunch of pins and stuff in his arm, they didn't take him initially. So, because you have to be 100% when you go into the military, unless you're like a doctor or something. Anyway, so he went back to work as a ranch hand, and you guys should read about this in his autobiography. It's so fascinating. So the place that he lived actually helped him quite a bit with his future in the Navy when he became a SEAL. He was living in a tiny shack in the middle of this ranch. It was cold. There was no air conditioning. There was no heating. He had a furnace. I mean, he's just like surviving for years.
Is this his family's ranch?
No, it's a buddy of his.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow, that's...
Yeah, you turned 18. Bye. Should have stayed at college. So he slept on a cot. It was freezing. He would like lay close to the furnace to get a little bit of warmth. It's just, I mean, it's perfect training to be a Navy SEAL, to be honest. So about a year or so later, the Navy recruiter actually called him up and was like, hey, bro. Are you still interested in being a SEAL? And he was like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the ranch life and everything, but I can do something better.
So the pins were no longer an issue?
Yeah, the recruiter assured him, because he asked, you know, he's like, well, but I still have pins in my arm.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's fine.
It's fine now.
We're going to just not care about that.
Just step over the females.
Yep. So in August of 1998, he enlisted into the Navy, and then he went to basic training in February of 1999. So that's quite a bit of time. And so I'm assuming, because I did the same thing, that he went through this thing called the delayed entry program. He didn't talk about it in his book, but I'm just assuming that that's what happened. So you enlist, and then you wait until there's a class available for you to go to.
Oh, well, a lot of high school kids will do that too.
Like, yeah, that's when I did it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think that's called the DEP program, delayed entry.
oh, the acronyms.
Here we go with the acronyms. So he graduated from basic training at Naval Station Great Lakes, Illinois. Do you guys, I said Illinois.
Mm-hmm. I heard it. My ear perked
noise.
Up. Noise. Mm-mm.
It's just a noy.
Yeah, I lived there for a little while.
It's French. Mm. It's French for, that's where boot camp is.
It's French for cornfields.
So we graduated from boot camp at Great Lakes in 1999. And in the Navy, we call it Great Mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Well played.
Yeah. I actually went to Orlando back when, before they shut it down. There was San Diego, Orlando, and then Great Mistakes. And so you got your choice.
Why would anyone go to Great Mistakes over Orlando or San Diego?
Oh, yeah. I like how you think there's a choice.
Oh, see.
She's so cute, guys.
I promise. I'll get smarter as
we're
we go.
Well, we're going to, that's why she's here, to ask the questions that other people like your mom have too. So, he attended additional training at the as an intelligence specialist. So back in the day, this has changed. Their process has changed. But if you're going to be a Navy SEAL, you first get a enlisted rating first. So he was going to go be an intelligence specialist. And now you just go in as undesignated and you become a SEAL. And that's your designator. She's giving me the face.
Okay.
A designator is like your job title.
Okay. But that's assigned after you go through boot camp.
Right.
Okay.
So he went to intelligence school at this place called Nimitz-E in Dam Neck. Remember we talked about on the other podcast about Dam Neck, Virginia. For some reason, she giggles. So this is the Navy and Marine Corps Intelligence Training Center. And he went there from April to July 1999. And then he got to wait around at this really fun place called MPC Millington, Tennessee. Navy and Marine Corps, you know who I'm talking about. Satan's army lives there. This is the Naval Personnel Command. It is awful.
Really?
The people that create the orders for you either can ruin your life or not ruin your life.
Oh, how do you get on the good list?
Well, I don't know. I never got on it.
I was never on that one.
Yeah, so he was there from August 99 to 2000 and March 2000. Which is quite a while,
yeah,
to be hanging out. So what does a young man do when in Satan's land, where Satan's army works? Well, he decided to meet up with some other people who were going to be SEAL candidates, and they started working out. Oh. They started running, because he was an athlete, but he's been working on a ranch all this time. And he was a Bronco rider. I mean, that doesn't really translate to being a... Maybe it does. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the training looks like, but I do know some of the best quarterbacks in football come from working and baling hay, and there's a lot of carryover, so I don't know with the SEALs, but I imagine he's probably a lot stronger than what he imagines.
Yeah, he did get pretty strong, and then and he worked out, and he realized that... In his autobiography, he was talking about that it was great that he was doing that training. It wasn't good enough, but it was better than nothing.
that's wise.
Just going to have your ass handed to you at SEAL training. So eventually he received an invitation to the 24-week basic underwater demolition, sea, air, land, or SEAL training, in case you've been living under a rock. First, they start with BUDS, basic underwater demolition. They get the short shorts.
Oh.
We wear short shorts.
Wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, then they go to Coronado, California, where one time I was walking, and I was walking on the beach, and the SEALs apparently were training there, and I walked, it was dark, and I walked inside their little area, and they escorted me off.
Oh,
don't
wow.
go there. Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to leave now.
You don't have the appropriate clothing or attitude. So Chris graduated from class 233 in March 2001, followed by what I can only imagine is the absolute best time on earth, SEAL qualification training, or SQT.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah, Coronado, May to August. Ooh. Sounds like it probably wasn't hot.
Yeah. Yeah, well, good thing he's Coronado. From Odessa.
Yeah, he's like seasoned.
Yeah, he's not even sweating at this point.
Yeah, he's like, what are you guys complaining about? So somewhere in here, he met and married his wife, Taya, who I think still lives in Texas, yeah. But I'm not 100% sure. She's a lovely woman. She had heard about SEALs.
Yeah.
Because she lived there.
Yeah.
And she was like, nah.
I've seen enough of your kind.
Yeah, I've met you before. And so she wasn't interested at that point in meeting him. And so she asked him what he did the first time they met at a bar. She didn't know he was a SEAL or in SEAL training. But he told her that he would like wax surfboards or, you know, wash cars or whatever, mm-hmm. or train dolphins.
Oh, he didn't tell her that he was going through SEAL training?
No, because that makes people run away.
Yeah. Well, I would I mean, but I'm not around it all the time. As a civilian, I would think that's hot.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I have SEAL friends, and they're not bad.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been the worst line. However, her being a local, she's probably like, pfft.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen you before, next pal. One. Yeah. Yeah, call me when you graduate.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually they got married, and y'all should read the book because he describes meeting her. It's like the sweetest thing. The sweetest. It's adorable as far as seals go.
Aww.
So, all right, men, listen up. We're going to talk about guns and shit. All right, ready? So while in training, Kyle learned to use four different rifles in order to know which one to use while walking about in places like Iraq and Afghanistan.
This is my summer rifle.
So this is the one. So I'm imagining like a model on a catwalk, like displaying these. Okay, so a semi-automatic 7.62 NATO Mark II sniper rifle. This one can be used for patrol.
Ooh.
Golf clap. A 5.56 NATO Mark 12 designated marksman rifle modified with a lower receiver for an M4A1 to get the collapsible stock and allow full auto fire. This one, ladies and gentlemen, is for urban patrol.
It reminds me of The Price is Right.
The Price is Right.
During the showcase showdown, they're like a new Mazda Miata.
It's a Remington 700 300, later type classified as a Mark 13 Mod 1 300 Winchester Magnum sniper rifle with, ladies and gentlemen, Macmillan's stock and customized barrel, which was later replaced with a 300 Winchester Magnum Accuracy International. It goes for $3 million.
And it could be yours if the price is right.
What are you going to bet, Marsha?
$5.
I'm going to go with five. They're saying $5. Yeah, I'm going to go with $5.60. Okay.
Yeah, no, quit looking at your family, Barbara.
Your family's wrong every time.
They don't know.
And then, of course, various rifled chambered in .338. I don't know what I'm talking about. Lupow Magnum? Lupow.
Lupow.
It's probably pronounced wrong. I didn't carry this one in my airplane, so whatever. Magnum used for long-range shooting.
Oh.
The long range.
That's what I think is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, everyone wants to go to SEAL Team 6. That's that's the spec ops of the spec ops.
The Harvard of the military.
Yes. The cool guys. But he went to SEAL Team 3, which he was totally fine with. So he went as a sniper within the sniper element called Platoon Charlie, later called Cadillac, and that is within the Naval Special Warfare Command.
Cool.
Yeah. Who are now accepting applications by women.
Oh, the SEALs?
So they're not a SEAL.
Okay.
They drive the boats. They do the lookout. They do some supply stuff. Are you a female who works for a SEAL team?
Right in. I would love.
Call me, girl. My phone number is 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-8-9.
Bingo.
So Chris served four tours of duty with SEAL Team 3, including major battles in the Iraq War, where I was too, also known as Operation Iraqi Freedom, or OIF.
I think I've heard of that one.
You've heard of that
one?
Yeah, that was within your time.
Yeah.
It's wild to me when I meet people who were like born at the beginning of that war.
Or who don't know it.
Or they like the Twin Towers is like a historical event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like we read about World War II.
Yeah.
They're reading about the Twin Towers. Like it's wild to me. I'm like, oh God, I'm not really almost 50. Shut up.
You're such a baby.
God. So the very first time he took a shot at a human was in Iraq. Before that, it's just, you know.
Target practice.
I'm terrible too. Did I ever tell you about this when I was retiring? I retired in 2013. And before I got out, we were doing a gun shoot. And so we went out there with a 9mm, which is like the worst gun on earth. It's totally useless. You're better off hitting somebody in the head with it.
Get a frying pan.
Yeah, get a frying pan. Put the gun down and get the frying pan. So I did one last shoot, right? And so you do it standing, sitting, kneeling, crawling, mm-hmm. walking, all these things, right? So I bring it home to my husband, and I was like, see, I would miss you if you're running away from me. And he's like, oh my God, babe, come on.
Oh, you can shoot me better than that.
Let me put my arm on the counter.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. No, here we go.
Run.
Yeah. Run. Yeah. I'm terrible at shooting. You know, anything that involves a ball or a gun.
Well, that limits that your social life.
Stop that.
I actually love the long range shooting. The Hubs has an AK and we go and shoot occasionally, and I love the long range.
Yeah, we have two AR-15s.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. Well, they can't come into Texas and take
them. Take it.
Come and take it. Yeah, there you go.
All right. So according to his autobiography, he did struggle a bit before he took this first shot.
He did struggle a bit. It sounds like it's going to be a really great shot.
Well, it was a mental struggle.
Oh.
So he struggled because he had to shoot a woman.
Oh.
Carrying a hand grenade.
Oh.
Heading toward his buddies, the Marines.
Yeah.
So his chief was like, pull the trigger, bro.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not what he said. He probably said, pull the fucking trigger.
Yeah.
So he pulled it. CNN later reported that the woman was cradling a toddler.
Oh, come on, CNN.
Well, CNN has to report the news. And this is a part of war that civilians don't like.
Yeah.
Because... And the problem is when you're dealing with a thing like ISIS, the men stay back and they give the bomb or the grenade to the woman. They strap it to the woman. They strap it to the child, and they let the woman and the children go instead of being a man.
Yeah. And then it.
Yeah.
But truthfully, if she was headed towards them and that had been the full story. Just saying.
Right. Because the news could have been woman with grenade blows up Marine platoon.
Yeah.
So that's the opposite end of it.
That's
so
it's not quite as catchy, though.
Yeah, it's not. Nope. No, people don't get upset about that. So as ordered, Chris opened fire, killing the woman before she could attack. That was his first shot. See, and I flew Prowlers. I didn't have to drop bombs on people. I didn't have to do any of that. I did other things to protect the Marines and the Army. And so I don't know what it's like to murder someone.
Yeah, but as somebody in the military, I don't know. I'm coming from everything this season is going to be me not knowing, but there's gotta be that like line where you're like, I was protecting my family, my brothers, my sisters.
Well, we all go through, anytime you're going to go into combat, you're going to go through survival school, SEER school.
Yeah.
Survival, evasion, resistance, and escape.
You said it was like a luxury trip.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, you're in a 4-star hotel. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean,
three meals a day.
8 meals a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was out in Warner Springs Weight Loss Center, which is in Warner Springs, just call it Warner Springs Weight Loss Center. So, because you lose a lot of weight.
I get it.
You're out there in the middle of nowhere in California desert, and you're having to survive, right?
Yeah.
And you go to prison camp, and so that's where you learn who you are and what challenges, how you're going to react to being uncomfortable, real uncomfortable, and you learn how to compartmentalize. And that compartmentalization mm-hmm. is what allows military members to do their job.
Oh, okay.
And then come home and be totally normal.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah. I need 5 pills. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
So Chris proved to be an effective sniper in Iraq with a large number of confirmed and unconfirmed kills. This is going to be important later. Chris's shooter statements were filled out every time that he went on a sniper mission, and they were reported up the chain of command, and then they kept them in case they needed to be contested, or they felt like in case the leadership or someone else in the civilian world, like the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Anyway, so if it fell outside the rules of engagement, so I had to do this as well. Everybody who flies into country with a mission number has to fill out a form, and it's just your report about what you saw, what happened, how many bombs you dropped, what whatever.
Yeah.
So for OIF, when I flew, we had a mission number, and every mission number is specifically for your mission for a certain location, and it's directed by the president. The president isn't calling you on the phone, but it's, that's how it works. So
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden.
Hello.
Guys, I'm going to need you to fly to Iraq. I don't know where it is, but
I'm at Chuck E. Cheese.
Watch me hit this ball. So we had a mission number, and our mission numbers for OIF for flying were called Noble Eagle numbers. And that, so every mission number started with N-E and then some numbers after it. And so that is how we also got our reports and medals and all that stuff. So he had to also do this. He had to fill out it out, how many bullets he used, mm-hmm. who he shot, what the situation was, whatever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize the paperwork was so intense.
Yeah, it's the boring shit of the military, man. The admin. Can you fill out this paper, please?
No.
I'm going to file it over here. Yeah. So, fighter guys would like write down how many weapons they dropped or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one time that the fighter squadron in my air wing dropped this thing called Blue Death on a cow. Blue Death is a training round, and they didn't mean to drop it on a cow. They were doing a training. And so the Iraq was like, you dropped Blue Death on my cow.
Did they make steaks out of it?
I don't know. Oh, I didn't ask.
This is a filet mignon coated in a garlic Blue Death. Yummy.
Yeah, so anyway, that's the boring admin side of fighting the war. Filet mignon. Okay, so now we're going to talk about rules of engagement.
Okay.
All right, so I'm just going to read this shit, and if you don't care about this and you want to not take a nap right now, then just move on. Fast forward like 30 seconds or a minute. All right, rules of engagement are military directives meant to describe the circumstances under which ground, naval, and air forces will enter into and continue combat with opposing forces. Formally, rules of engagement to the orders issued by a competent military authority, and that is typically like JAG. They don't fly jets, by the way. That shit's all made up.
JAG across the street.
Yeah, that guy probably wrote ROE. And Governor DeSantis was a JAG for the SEAL teams.
Oh, that's cool.
So that he was one of the dudes writing this stuff. So it delineates when, where, how, and against who military force can be used, and they have implications for like what the actions may take by the member themselves. So we're allowing you to shoot people if you're shot upon. Things like that.
Okay.
Don't fire on them until you see the whites of their eyes.
Yeah, the whites of their eyes.
Yeah. And these directives are issued by your commanding officer. Rules of engagement are part of the general recognition that procedures and standards are essential for conduct and effectiveness of civilized warfare.
See, there are a lot of confusing words.
Mm-hmm. So what we're saying is we're going to allow you to go into country. It's been proved by Senate. It's been authorized by the president. We're going to go into another country. We're going to drop some bombs and kill some people. But we're going to do it, like, professionally.
And record keeping.
Yes. And if you don't do it professionally, you will be going to jail.
Mm.
Like the Fallujah guys who took pictures with the prisoners and the dead bodies.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's against the rules of engagement.
Rule number one.
Yes. And we're briefed on the rules of engagement every single time. And you're rebriefed sometimes when you have like something unusual that's going to happen. Like one time we were flying our regular mission, but we had to go do this other mission with some Air Force fighter jets. And it's a maneuver that we fly to try to get people out of their house because it looks like we're going to bomb their house. And so they go a running. And so we had to, we had certain rules, an amount of times we could do the flyby, amount of times, how low, how high, with a speed, the whatever. Just make it look like you want to get them out of their house and they'll run away.
Could you do one by my neighborhood?
I can, yes, with my airplane.
That'd be awesome.
Yes, my airplane is in the hangar right now, actually. So anyway, so rules of engagement are always briefed, and so that's why he has to fill out all those forms to make sure that he's following all the rules of engagement, because that shit's important.
Yeah, I imagine.
It's important when you fight in the peoples. So military members are given the right to kill people, but it has to be professional.
Clear as mud.
Like, we're not giving you full rein to go be a fucking
jackass.
Serial killer.
Yeah.
That's not the, there needs to be a reason why you are pulling the trigger.
Okay. Yep. Seems fair. Yeah.
Again, Chris's shooter statements filled out by every sniper after every mission were reported to higher command, who kept them in case they were contested outside the rules of engagement, because CYA all day.
What's CYA?
Cover your ass, girl.
That's amazing.
So there's some conflictions in the number of kills he actually has, but when you're in war and you're just pulling the trigger.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is like, how do you know exactly?
Whose bullet was it anyway? That's the next show. It's not whose line is it anyway. It's whose bullet. So the publisher of his autobiography, Harper's Collins, states, quote, "The Pentagon has officially confirmed more than 150 of Kyle's kills. The previous American record was 109, but it has been declined. But it, being the Pentagon, has declined to verify the total number as for this book that was written for his autobiography. They're like, we're not going to tell you
exactly how much, but if you want to take a guess.
Yeah. So in his autobiography, Kyle wrote, quote, "The Navy credits me with more kills." Now, I want you to imagine a Southern boy talking about this with some spit in his, you know, he's got some chewing tobacco.
And he's got that Matthew McConaughey whistle.
Yeah, he's got the whistle. "So the Navy credits me with more kills as a sniper than any other American service member, past or present. I guess that's true. They go back and forth on what the number is. 1 week is 160, the, quote, unofficial number, as of this writing, for what it's worth. Then it's way higher. Then it's somewhere in between. So if you want the number, ask the Navy. You might actually get the truth and catch them on the right day." Unquote.
Oh, that was part of his quote?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's true. And the Navy has to hold things in and not report them because they're classified.
Yeah.
For example, Osama bin Laden.
Or aliens lately.
Aliens. Oh my God. You guys have to go on TikTok and watch the videos about aliens. It's hilarious. This girl is like, if they're not going to pay my bills, I don't care.
I always tell my husband, you know, we watch these shows where these aliens come to Earth and they want to steal our resources or take our people. They show up and they're like, this is like the Mississippi of the universe.
Nah.
Let's get out of here. I'm not even stopping for gas.
I think we landed at the wrong one. It's the next one. Yes, it's one light year down. Yep. Wrong exit. So on July 8th, 2016, this is after he was murdered. So we're kind of fast forwarding and pulling back a little bit, like the Navy does. So on July 8th, 2016, after he was murdered, the U.S. Navy corrected his DD-214, which is the most important form on Earth, regarding some decorations listed on his original discharge document. The DD-214 is the piece of paper that when you leave, it tells your service entry dates, your exit dates, where you were, what you did.
Oh, it's like your resume.
It's like your resume with absolutely nothing medical involved.
Okay.
So it's one piece of paper.
That sums up your entire career. Yep. That's got to feel amazing.
All the things that you got, and then your date of discharge.
Written in 18-point font.
That's right. and signed by the member. So the original discharge papers issued to him upon leaving service tally the account given in his autobiography as 2 silver stars and 5 bronze stars with valor.
Wow.
Yeah. The Navy, okay, like to get these, you have to do some really crazy shit, man. I mean, because some, like, I've read a person's bronze star and it just says, this person received the bronze star on this date.
Yeah. Don't ask.
Because it's classified what he did. And I'm like, that seems fake. I want to read what did you do?
It's classified. I have to kill you.
That's got to be the hardest part. You're like, I did some awesome shit.
Yeah, it was
but
really,
it's not on this paper.
Yeah, it was cool, man.
Take my word for it.
Anyway. Signed by the president, whatever.
Do you get a choice to sign it if it's inaccurate? I'm imagining no.
It's not inaccurate because you're sitting next to the person who is writing
who's
it up.
Typing
yeah,
it.
Who's okay. typing, yeah. But it's based on, they go through your service record, mm-hmm. and then they pull everything up and make sure that everything's right. And then before you sign it, are you sure this is accurate?
Okay. Does it matter?
Yep. So the Navy revised it to 1 silver star instead of 2, and 4 bronze stars with valor instead of 5. Okay. The Navy said, quote, Kyle would have played no role in the production of his personnel files other than signing the DD-214 upon his discharge. And that's true. And, quote, after thoroughly reviewing all available records, the Navy determined an error was made and issued a corrected copy of his DD-214.
Okay, so that answers my question.
So for me, mm-hmm. okay, when mm-hmm. you are presented as a military member, when you are presented with an award, it's not accidentally stuffed into your record sometime. And then,
mailed
like, maybe.
You.
Yeah, it's not mailed to you. You don't find it later. Oh, wow, that's so cool. That's not how it happens. You are given the award while wearing a dress uniform, typically,
yeah.
and it's given to you by your commanding officer, and you take a picture with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, I'm confused.
Yeah, how does it get off?
There should be a document. Mm-hmm. But I will say, I had. When I was an officer, I had 4 Navy achievement medals from my enlisted time. Now, when my commanding officer was writing it up, I just happened to be the personnel officer at the time, which sucks. It's the worst job on earth. Don't do it if you don't have to. Anyway, so I was looking at it and it said in lieu of 4th award. And I said, no, I have actually 4 awards. So I had to show him my paperwork.
Here's my picture.
Here's my 1, 2, 3, and 4. And this is, and then this is my 5th award. And he's like, oh, okay. And so he just changed it, you know. And so mistakes do happen.
Okay.
But he should have them, like, framed hanging on his wall, like every other weirdo in the military.
Yeah. I mean, you go into any. Okay.
Yeah. So that was kind of weird, but mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not my battle to fight.
Yeah.
Okay. So either way, he earned a lot of awards mm-hmm. for being a badass.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, so now we're fast-forwarding, possibly to save his marriage, because SEAL life sucks ass mm-hmm. for everyone. I don't know, but he left the Navy in 2009 and moved to Midlothian. So he was in for about 11 years.
Right, so where he'd go back home.
Yeah, he went back home with his wife and 2 kids and lived a happy life. He became the president of Kraft International, and it's really funny. If you watch...
Kraft like the cheese?
No, Kraft with a C, like the Kraft. Yeah, he got real into cheese.
I got so excited. I was like, I love their macaroni.
He's a cheesehead. He's rolling over his grave right now, ma'am.
Oh, everybody's just like, who is this idiot?
No, everybody's laughing because they're like, I love this idiot. All right, so he's the president of Kraft International, and if you watch interviews, he's always wearing his Kraft. Now, he's one of the old school guys that you know, bends the hat cover.
Hubs does it.
Why does my kids not, it's flat. Just bend, you bend it.
I know, you actually take the brim and you tuck it in that little hole that's on the
in
back.
In the hole. Yeah, everybody knows that except for not us.
Okay.
Except for not millennials anyway. So he's always wearing this hat. It's cute. So Kraft International, I just call the SEAL cute. It's so cute. Cute as a button.
Yeah, they hear that a lot, I'm sure.
It's not my fault. The guy was running in front of my line of sight with a gun. I don't know.
And some macaroni.
Well, I had a Marine Corps sniper as a drill instructor when I was in officer candidate school, and he said, you can run, but you'll just die tired.
Oh.
But I was like,
so true. That's something to mull
over. North Carolina.
When I fall asleep tonight.
Snipers. So he's president of Kraft International, which is a tactical training company for the U.S. military and then law enforcement communities.
Okay, so not macaroni.
Not macaroni and not cheese. So in 2012, HarperCollins released Chris Kyle's autobiography. You may have heard of it, American Sniper. He initially did not want to write this book because he was like, I don't want to be that guy writing about SEAL stuff.
Yeah.
Like the other guys have gotten a lot of flack for writing SEAL books.
Yeah.
Well, the publisher was like, everybody else is doing it. You should just write yours because you have like the most kills in history. And he's like, okay, but when I write it, I want to really talk about the other people, not just myself. So he really, really talks about his friends, his teammates, you know, all the other operators that he worked with, the people who trained him, all that stuff. And he really gets personal about it. So it's y'all should read the book. Seriously, go order it. I'll wait. In his book, American Sniper.
America.
Chris wrote bluntly of his experiences of the battle for control over Ramadi. He says, quote, force moved that battle. We killed the bad guys. We brought the leaders to the peace table. And that is how the world works, unquote. All right.
Mic drop.
And then, I don't know. In the book and later interviews, Chris stated that he had no regrets about his work. And I actually watched him in an interview where he's talking to this British lady from the BBC or something. And she's like, what do you say to the people who are critical about you killing people, killing women? And his answer was, I had to do it to protect my Marines.
Yeah.
He also said, I don't really care what other people think about me.
Ah, it's a good Texas boy right there.
Your opinion is your issue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
The British reporter's like, oh,
that wasn't the answer. I thought you would be regretting all of it. He's like, I'm a SEAL. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I do understand that sentiment as we were talking about before, like having to compartmentalize and do all that. And recently I got called a terrorist. I did. I got called a terrorist by a Lebanese man living in America for 40 years.
What?
Okay. And he can have those feelings. That's totally fine. But I'm not personally a terrorist, right? So people want to label SEALs as murderers. Right?
Yeah.
But they're just doing their job.
Wow. Thanks for serving our country.
Yeah.
I see more people, like every time I go to the airport, if I see anybody who's served in the military, I do it. I see other people doing it. Wow. I just didn't know that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it happened, but I didn't know it happened to you.
Yeah. That's a good time.
Good time.
Yeah. So you're just following orders, right?
Yeah.
It's a volunteer service now. No one's being drafted right now. And so I stopped talking to that man not because I was personally offended, but I was offended for the people who spit on my dad coming back from Vietnam and called him a baby killer.
No.
Because we're just following orders, man.
Yeah, I was just about to compare it to Vietnam because you hear a lot about that happening then.
Worst trained people. Oh. Awful. Yeah. Yeah, we serve at the pleasure of the president. That is in our oath. When we raise our hand and say the oath, we are serving the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Would I rather be doing something else on a Tuesday? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't personally agree with the Iraq war, but does that matter? It does not matter.
They didn't do a survey monkey and ask.
No survey monkeys. No.
Nope. So weird.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if I personally agree. And the people that don't agree, they're called conscientious observers. And they need to leave the military. If you are a conscientious observer, you need to go. You should not be in the military because they're a danger.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, we've all watched Full Metal Jacket.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're either going to kill other people in the military, you're going to kill civilians, or you're going to you're going to walk off the job when we really need you, man.
Hey, where were you about 5 minutes ago, bud?
Yeah. Oh, were you telling secrets to the other side? Great. So glad. They really are just a hazard. So Chris's book, American Sniper, had a 36-week run on the New York Times best-selling list and brought Kyle national attention, and he kind of didn't like it.
I was just about to say, he hated it.
Okay, I'm going to stand up here, but he likes to talk about serving and being an American and, America. So following its release, media articles challenged some of Chris's anecdotes, but the core of his narrative was widely accepted. So maybe the fish wasn't this big. Maybe it was this big, but it was still a fish.
Yeah.
So, quote, Michael J. Mooney, author of his biography, says, quote, tales of his heroism on the battlefield were already lore in every branch of the armed forces, unquote. Yeah.
Yeah, but to be that cool across all the branches seems pretty tough.
Yeah, you're that guy. Yeah, so Kyle also worked for this company called Fitco Cares Foundation, a nonprofit organization that creates a heroes project to provide free in-home fitness equipment. I'm going to need mine. Thank you very much. Individualized programs, personal training, and life coaching to in-need veterans with disabilities, Gold Star families, and those with PTSD. Do you know what a Gold Star family is? That's somebody, their person died in the line of duty.
Oh, wow. No, I did not.
Yeah. And Gary Sinise flies Gold Star families across the country to go to Disneyland. And my husband, when he was working for American Airlines, flew them.
Oh, that's
he's a veteran.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
So one of the stories he actually told was about this, about Jesse Ventura.
Oh, really?
So Jesse Ventura used to be a frogman, which is, frogmen were right before the SEALs and they kind of merged together.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he was a frogman from Vietnam, and they ended up being SEALs later.
Didn't realize. Wait, not Jesse Ventura was
that Jesse Ventura?
I didn't realize he was.
Yeah, so he's in a bar one day. This sounds like every other Navy story in a bar. So he's in a bar, mouthing off, and Chris punched him in the face. All right,
that's anyway, a good story,
I know, right? I want to tell that story. And Jesse Ventura was like, he never punched me.
Yeah,
yeah, right, bro. Sure, he didn't. Okay, yeah, whatever. You're 85 years old.
Governor.
Yeah. Don't come at me, Jesse. I can run faster than you. So on August 13th, 2012, Chris appeared on this reality TV show called Stars Earn Stripes, and it's where they pair up celebrities with special ops and military and
stuff.
That
sounds like a nightmare for the military.
Yeah, he was paired with Dean Cain. I'm not sure how it went. I didn't watch it.
Superman's not so super.
Yeah. Was Dean Cain Superman?
Yeah. Well, not like that Superman. He played in the series.
Lame. Mm-hmm. All right. There were some stories that Chris said he did that couldn't be verified. There was no, anyway, mm-hmm. people just be talking about that fish. So whatever, I'm not going to go into all that stuff. If you want to research it, go ahead. So while Chris claims to have killed roughly 320 enemies as part of his service in Iraq, the Navy says he killed 160.
Eesh. That's...
Well, he's a long-range sniper, right?
Yeah.
He's not down there with, the Gatling gun, cutting people in half.
Yeah.
That's not his thing. So the Navy's number would be... of, quote, confirmed kills, which are the ones that are verifiable by someone else standing next to you. I also saw the bullet go into the man's forehead.
Yeah. Okay. Confirmed. Sign here, please.
Yeah. And sometimes in war, who the hell knows? My dad has all these awards, but that's probably half of the awards he should have got because he was in Vietnam flying a helicopter, right? He was a door gunner.
Oh,
I mean, you're just
that's
pulling the
cool.
trigger. You're just pulling the trigger and...
One, two, three, four, five.
Yeah, he told me they had asbestos gloves. That was what helped them to pull the can.
So
when the can was empty,
the stuff you're not supposed to touch in your attic.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a miracle he's alive.
Yeah.
Anyway. So whose bullet is it anyway? Anyway. So they're still finding bones from World War II. It's very difficult to do accounting in war.
Yeah.
And there's
I imagine.
a personnel man, like, all right, sir, so according to my calculations, I'm pushing his glasses up, like.
He's got his clipboard following you around. I counted 54 and a half.
I mean, it whizzed by his ear. I'm not going to count that. It's so fucking stupid. Like, it's just stupid. Anyway,
so to recap.
He grew up, became a SEAL, and got out. And so that's where we were. Now he's helping people. He's helping veterans with PTSD. On February 2nd, 2013, Chris and his friend Chad Littlefield, who is 35, were shot and killed by this great guy named Eddie Ray Routh at the Rough Creek Ranch Lodge Resort shooting range in Erath County, Texas. Both Chris and Chad Littlefield were armed with 45 caliber 1911 style pistols when they were killed, but neither of their guns had been unholstered, and they both had their safeties on. So they, like, didn't shoot themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's called evidence.
Yeah.
Chris was killed with a 45 caliber pistol, while Chad was shot with a 9mm Sig Sauer pistol. Both guns belonged to Chris.
No, really?
Mm-hmm. Routh was a 25-year-old U.S. Marine veteran from Lancaster, Texas.
Mm.
Chris and Chad had both taken Routh to the gun range in an effort to help him with his PTSD.
Yeah, what a way to thank him.
Routh has been in and out of mental hospitals for at least 2 years at this point, and he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. His family also said that he had PTSD from his time in the military, although that has been a little bit discounted, and I'll talk about that here in a second. On the way to the shooting range, Chris texted Chad. Okay, Chad's sitting in the seat, and then Routh is in the back seat, and Chris is driving. So Chris texted Chad, quote, "This dude is straight up nuts," unquote. It's such a dude thing.
Yeah, and the guys in the back, Ralph's like, "I saw that. I saw what you wrote.
I know what you wrote." So Chad responded, quote, "Check my six," which is like, check my, mm-hmm. watch my back. Okay, I'm not Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a SEAL. I'm not Chad. I wasn't there that day. And I'm not victim shaming. So, like, don't come at me, bro. Whatever. What I'm trying to figure out is what Chris was thinking taking a PTSD-laden schizophrenic to a gun range. I don't understand that.
So here's my question. One, did he know that he was schizophrenic, and was he schizophrenic before he entered the military?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. So that's my question. I would assume, knowing military people that and having friends that are SEALs, that they probably didn't know. They probably thought he was just a weird dude.
Yeah.
And they were trying to help him out.
Yeah.
And that he's weird from PTSD.
Yeah.
And I get that because I'm weird from PTSD too.
You were weird before though, in fairness.
I'm so weird. I know. I was diagnosed with that at an early age.
Weirdness.
It's contagious. So that's like the thing that really bothers me from this whole story, because I feel like this is totally preventable.
Yeah, but truthfully, just what you said makes it seem a lot more understandable. The fact that we all have a weird friend.
Yeah, I am it for you.
Yeah.
And you are it for me.
Yes, exactly.
We are it for us.
Check my six.
Yeah. So 4 months later, while in his jail cell, Routh shared with the former Erath County Sheriff's Deputy Gene Cole, quote, "I was just riding in the back seat of the truck and nobody would talk to me.
Oh.
They were just taking me to the range, so I shot them."
Wow.
"I feel bad about it, but they wouldn't talk to me. I'm sure they've forgiven me," unquote.
Oh, no, really?
Bro, I don't think they're forgiving you.
Wow.
You shot two dudes that were trying to help you in the back. You're an asshole.
Yeah, I know sixth grade girls that are nicer than that.
Right? Freshmen. So after he killed Chris and Chad, Routh went to his sister's house in Midlothian and told her what he had done.
Oh.
His sister, Laura Blevins, was like, "What?"
Yeah.
And she called 911 and told the emergency operator, quote, "They went out to the shooting range like he's all crazy. He's psychotic," unquote. Local police caught Routh after a short freeway chase, which ended when Routh who fled the scene in Chris's F-350 truck, crashed into a police cruiser in Lancaster.
Wow. This guy is 10 for 10.
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. I like him a lot. You're my bestie. So Ralph was arraigned later that same day on two counts of capital murder and was taken to the Erath County Jail for holding under $3 million bond. Probably not going to pay that.
So this was prosecuted by Erath County because it didn't occur as they were, like, enlisted, or it didn't happen on military grounds.
Oh, no, they're all out of the military. And Chad Littlefield is a civilian. Okay. He's always been. He's just
buddies with Chris. Yes.
So his trial was set for May 5th, 2014, but was delayed to allow more time to comply with DNA testing requirements. Mm-hmm. As I roll my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
I'm surprised.
I bet there was like a videotape at the gun range and shit.
Yeah, and I imagine.
Why do you need DNA, bro?
I'm surprised he made it to trial, truthfully.
I want to talk to the gun range people.
Yes.
Were you there that day? Like, what happened?
Well, we've got a video that they wouldn't take from us.
Yeah. So the trial began on February 11th, 2015. On February 24th, 2015, Ralph was found guilty of killing Chris Kyle and Chad Littlefield. All right, so this is going to be kind of lengthy, but it's really important because it goes to talk about Ralph. So a quote from the New York Times article, quote, Stephenville, Texas, which is where it was held. Mm-hmm. Eddie Ray Ralph, the mentally disturbed veteran who killed Chris Kyle, the former Navy SEAL marksman who inspired the movie, quote, American Sniper, was sentenced Tuesday to life in prison after a jury found him guilty of murder, rejecting his claims that he was legally insane at the time because you took a car and ran away and then told your sister knew what you was doing.
Yeah, and then told her it's because they weren't talking to you.
Yeah. So continuing on with a quote, Mr. Ralph and his lawyers had argued that he was not guilty by reason of insanity and that he belonged not in prison but to a state mental hospital, for which I say I'm rolling my eyes at you. His two-week trial for the killings of Mr. Kyle and Mr. Kyle's friend, Chad Littlefield, in 2013 centered on Mr. Ralph's state of mind. Jurors had to decide whether Mr. Ralph's erratic behavior, his delusions about hybrid pig people, and his heavy drug use were proof of insanity or evidence that he was a troubled but criminally responsible.
Now that's hard. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
You lost me at pig people.
Yeah, I know. With the death penalty off the table, the verdict that Mr. Ralph was guilty of capital murder left him facing only one possible sentence, and the judge issued it minutes after the verdict was announced.
Yeah.
Life in prison without parole. The judge announced the decision in a courtroom just 3 miles from a movie theater that had been playing American Sniper during the entire trial.
Oh.
To which I say, well played, sir.
Kudos.
Yeah, that began on February 11th. Since prosecutors decided beforehand not to seek the death penalty, he got, so the judge was Jason Cashin, sentenced to life without parole. And this is a soundbite that goes even deeper into what the jury heard. We are the jury found the defendant, Eddie Ray Ralph, guilty for the felony offense capital murder as charged in the indictment. Having received and accepted the jury's verdict in this matter, my statute, I will impose sentencing this matter confinement for life in the State Department of Criminal Justice without the possibility of parole. That's the verdict of this court, and I will enter judgment accordingly. You may be seated at this time. Judy Littlefield, Chad's mom, said, quote, we just want to say that we've waited 2 years for God to get justice for us on behalf of our son. And as always, God has proved to be faithful. And we're so thrilled that we have the verdict that we have tonight, unquote. Mr. Ralph, 27, shot Mr. Kyle and Mr. Littlefield in the back on February 2nd, 2013, at a gun range near a small town 100 miles southeast of Dallas, after Mr. Ralph's mother had asked Mr. Kyle to befriend her son. Boy, I bet she regrets that. After serving in the Marines, Mr. Ralph received a diagnosis of PTSD and psychosis, and relatives testified that he had been suicidal and paranoid in the months before the shooting. He used two of Mr. Kyle's handguns to shoot Mr. Kyle and Mr. Littlefield 13 times.
Jeez.
Slaying a sniper who protected Marines Ralph is a Marine in Iraq with such deadly accuracy that insurgents nicknamed him the Devil of Ramadi. In several videotaped and recorded interviews and interjections with the police that were played for the jurors, Mr. Ralph gave at times puzzling explanations about why he shot Mr. Kyle, 38, and Mr. Littlefield, 35.
Yeah.
He spoke of fearing for his life.
In the back of the car?
Yeah, and believing that they were going to kill him or take his soul.
Okay.
I don't think you have a soul, my friend.
Do pigs?
Maybe. He said that Mr. Littlefield was not shooting at the range and that that got him all riled up.
Well, what do you do with that?
My face looks like what the fuck.
Uh-huh.
He said he was offended that Mr. Kyle had not shaken his hand when they met. He was also bothered by the smell of cologne in Mr. Kyle's truck.
Oh, well, that's understandable.
And he was annoyed that the two men didn't talk to him on the drive to the range.
Carry on.
Again, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Quote, it smelled like sweet cologne, unquote, Mr. Ralph told a reporter from the New York Times in 2013 in a cell phone call from the jail. I was smelling love and hate. They were giving me some love and hate.
So you gave them lead? Is
sounds
that
like
the
they were
appropriate
just giving
gift?
You, sounds like they were just giving you a drive to the fucking range,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, a ride, yeah. Buddy.
Hey, buddy. They were giving you support, actually. In finding Mr. Ralph guilty and not legally insane, jurors appeared to have sided with the prosecutors who portrayed Mr. Ralph not as a sympathetic, troubled veteran, but as a callous killer who stopped at Taco Bell shortly after fleeing the scene in Chris Kyle's truck.
Not even Chick-fil-A, he went to Taco Bell.
Right, and knew his actions were wrong, a crucial part of the legal test of insanity. You're not insane.
Not if you're getting a Crunchwrap Supreme after you just murdered two people.
Now you're going to shit yourself while you're waiting in jail.
And was he in Chris's truck?
Yes.
Going through the drive-thru?
Yes. That.
Okay.
Yeah, all that.
All right.
Mental health experts who examined Mr. Ralph told the jurors that he had not been directly involved in combat in Iraq. How do you get PTSD? I don't know. I got questions. And that he had lied about putting the bodies of babies in a mass grave in Haiti as part of an earthquake deployment. So, like, he lied.
Yeah.
To get money.
Oh. So he just made up the story?
He's just making shit up, bro.
Oh.
Yeah. Two experts who evaluated him for the prosecution testified that Mr. Ralph was not insane and questioned whether he had exaggerated the trauma he experienced while in the Marines.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was in the tent the whole time to get disability benefits.
Mm.
Yeah. And had tried to sound schizophrenic to get out of prison.
Oh, I hear that's frowned upon.
Yeah. Lying under oath is bad. Mr. Ralph had made some bizarre statements that he believed people around him were half pig and half human. I think you're the half pig.
What happens at the dinner table where you're sitting around talking to sis and mom? You're like, hey, I have this theory. Can I see your tail? I mean, did they not see that there was something large?
No, they knew. They knew. They testified earlier that they knew. So he said that he thought people were half pig, half human, and that his co-workers at a cabinet shop were cannibals who were going to cook and eat him.
That's a whole different story we could tell.
Jeffrey Dahmer's dead, bro. Come on.
Pick another story.
Yeah. Yeah, something different. But one of the prosecutor's experts who examined Mr. Ralph, Mr. Randall Price, a Dallas forensic pathologist, testified that Mr. Ralph's statements about pig people may have come from not psychosis, but a TV show and an episode of Seinfeld.
No soup for you.
And a reality show called Boss Hog. Two of Ralph's favorite programs.
Oh, wow. Good thing he wasn't watching SpongeBob. I mean, really?
What would that be like?
Who knows?
Dude, you're wild. Okay, so the prosecutor's other expert, Dr. Michael Arambula, a San Antonio forensic psychologist who was president of the Texas Medical Board, said that the delusions of schizophrenics often had structure and detail, but that Mr. Ralph's statements about cannibals lacked specifics.
Okay. So he... Okay.
Yeah. So Mr. Arambula said that it doesn't have content. They just can cook me up like a ham hock. Yeah.
If you're going to do stupid shit, do it with some detail.
Like, research it, right? Man. You got to research how to be a schizophrenic before you lie about it.
Not on your own computer, though.
No. No, not on your own computer. On the you go to the library in the next county. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's how you do it. Hours after the killings, after Mr. Routh had been handcuffed and placed in the back of the car seat, where he was probably ignored again, he told officers that he was paranoid and schizophrenic. Such a statement, Mr. Price and Mr. Arambula said, indicated that Mr. Routh had known what he was doing and was trying to convince the authorities that he was insane, because people with severe mental illnesses are often reluctant to admit they have a problem.
And that's like, hi, my name is schizophrenia. Like, that's right. What, okay.
Yeah, so they say, Dr. Arambula said that he was showing his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his moronism. He was looking to get out of what he had done. Mr. Routh's lawyers defended his claim of schizophrenia, which is their job. Do your job, bro. They called to the stand Dr. Mitchell Dunn, a forensic psychiatrist who spent more than 6 hours with Mr. Routh last year and who testified that the defendant had been in a state of psychosis at the time of the attack and had shot the two men because he believed they were pig assassins sent to kill him.
I love bacon like the next person, but that's the dumbest.
Not this person. I don't love bacon. No. They're not listening to the podcast anymore now. So Dr. Dunn and Mr. Routh's lawyers used Mr. Kyle's own words to strengthen their point. As Mr. Routh sat in the back seat and Kyle texted Mr. Littlefield, "This dude is straight up nuts," Mr. Littlefield responded with, "Watch my six." Mr. Dunn described the text as, quote, "compelling evidence," unquote.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say so.
I can't believe that was his last text. This dude is straight up nuts, and then he murders him. Like, what the...
Well, I mean, that's not evidence. I don't...
Right. So doctors at the Dallas VA hospital, where you can die for a second time, who treated Mr. Routh before shooting, had said Mr. Routh had PTSD, but three experts who evaluated him for the defense and the prosecution testified that they didn't think he had PTSD, and that... But Mr. Routh's PTSD was, quote, kind of a myth that's come up in this case, unquote.
Yeah,
you can't blame PTSD on everything. Yeah. People are just idiots. Mr. Routh, who worked as a prison guard and a weapons maintenance specialist known as an armorer while in the Marines, told the experts who examined him that he had spent time in Iraq at Joint Base Balad, where he described it as plush because it had a movie theater and other amenities.
Did this guy, I mean, I know you said he never served in, like, actual...
I mean, he was in Iraq.
Yeah, but, like, touring? I mean,
I don't think he went with a gun somewhere to shoot a person.
That's what I wanted to
know. I don't think he actually saw it dead. But... Okay. So for the humanitarian mission in Haiti, he was aboard a ship most of the time, and none of the three experts said they believe Mr. Rouse claims that he had been seen, that he had seen or come in contact with the bodies of dead babies there.
Okay.
Yeah. Quote, he said there was one time when he and a Marine thought they might see a dead body floating in the water.
Oh, okay. So maybe he's almost, that's what he's talking about?
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Whatever. Routh is kicking it at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice Ramsey Unit in Resharon, Texas, if you want to go visit him.
Racine, Texas?
Resharon.
Resharon? Is that near Huntsville?
You don't know where that is?
No, I don't. I've lived here all of my life.
R-O-Sharon. Rosharon. Rosharon?
Just because it's spelled that way doesn't mean that's how I pronounce it.
Yep, it's probably pronounced Worcestershire. Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
Yeah, so anyway, he's in jail, whatever. So a memorial service was held for Chris at Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas on February 11th, and he was buried on February 12th, 2013 at the Texas State Cemetery in Austin. After the funeral, 200 miles of cars and trucks, and that's wild. So they were moved from Midlothian to Austin.
They had people lined up on the overpasses.
Yeah, hundreds of people, many waving American flags, lined Interstate 35 to view the passing procession and to pay their final respects to Kyle. In August 2013, Texas Governor Rick Perry signed Senate Bill 162, also known as the Chris Kyle Bill, to recognize military training in the issuance of occupational licenses, which is great because we have some experience when we leave the military.
That could be helpful.
Yeah. The bill has been co-sponsored by Republican Representative Dan Flint of Van and Democratic Senator Letitia Vandeput.
That's a fun last name.
Isn't it? It's like Deucey. You know people called him Dookie.
Dookie.
But anyway, yeah, of San Antonio. So the ceremony was attended by Kyle's widow, Taya. Okay, so Taya and Chris and their kids survived him being a SEAL, deployed four times to Iraq.
Killed here in America.
And killed here in America by a former Marine that he was trying to help.
Yeah.
Let that sink in. Sculptor Greg Mara created a memorial statue to Kyle for presentation to his widow. Fundraising for production of the statue was provided by members of the Tea Party movement. I don't know what that is. Sounds cool.
I thought the Tea Party was over.
I thought that was like the 1800s.
Yeah. Something with Britain.
Not here.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? I don't know.
Boston.
Who knows? In 2013, a Texas teacher named Dana Morris attempted to get a section of Highway 75 through Dallas named after Chris Kyle, but was unsuccessful. But in 2015, Morris made another attempt to get the road named after Chris Kyle and Chad Littlefield during the... This was really boring. Anyway, she got part of it named. They did drop the Chad Littlefield off because his widow, didn't want to have it on there. And so she ended up getting remarried, but so they named it Chris Kyle.
That would be hard. Like, every time you're stuck on 75, you're like,
yeah,
freaking Littlefield.
This is great. I love this. So the bill was changed to only reflect Chris Kyle's name.
Okay.
Yep. And then some other House bills were created, and the Chris Kyle Memorial Highway Bill was signed into law by Greg Abbott on June 3rd, 2015 in Dallas. And then Abbott said to Morris, who is the teacher, quote, "This was a great project for students and will leave a fundamental legacy in their learning about government," unquote.
Okay.
But then we have to watch you on TV, so there's that. Whatever.
I don't really think that was it.
Yeah. And so signs for the 11-mile stretch of Highway 287 through Midlothian, Texas, were unveiled.
Okay, so it's in his hometown.
Yeah. And then Clint Eastwood's film, American Sniper, is based on his autobiography. He's portrayed by Bradley Cooper, and then his wife is portrayed by Sienna Miller. And then for his portrayal of Chris Kyle, Cooper received an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor, but some other stupid film won it.
The Pianist.
It wasn't The Pianist. It was something worse.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. On February 2nd, 2015, exactly 2 years after Kyle's murder, Greg Abbott declared the day Chris Kyle Day. So February 2nd is okay. Chris Kyle Day. Yeah.
Write that on my calendar.
All right. So finally, I want to read the only citation that I can find from his Silver Star. So this is how it's read and written. So you get to learn about this. "It states of America takes pleasure in presenting the Silver Star to Special Warfare Operator First Class SEAL Christopher Scott Kyle, United States Navy, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action against the enemy while serving as lead sniper while assigned to Naval Special Warfare Task Unit Ramadi in direct support of Operation Iraqi Freedom from 24 April to 27 August 2006. Petty Officer Kyle's heroic actions, professionalism, and incredible sniper skills had tremendous impact in the success of U.S. and Iraqi forces in routing the insurgency and seizing key areas of the city of Ar-Ramadi, the epicenter of Al-Qaeda, and insurgent activity in Iraq. During 32 sniper overwatch missions, he personally accounted for 91 confirmed enemy fighters killed and dozens more probably killed or wounded. Petty Officer Kyle's efforts were integral to the success of four U.S. Army and Marine Corps Battalion Task Force operations, establishing U.S. and Iraqi Army combat outposts in the previously insurgent-held areas. His engagements directly prevented casualties to U.S. and Iraqi forces on more than 30 occasions, including enemy rocket-propelled grenade, mortar teams eliminated, 5 enemy snipers with scoped weapons eliminated, and dozens of insurgent fighters destroyed while actively engaging U.S. and Iraqi forces with small arms. By his bold leadership, courageous actions, and total dedication to duty, Petty Officer Kyle reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. And that is the end of the story.
I'm getting a little teary.
I know, it's wild, right? So that's how it's read. That is what is read to when a person is presented with their award. So that's why I'm confused about the number of them.
Yeah, seems like a lot of pomp and stance. Circumstance,
pomp and circumstance.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of fanfare would go into that. Well, that's...
Yeah, so now you know more about Chris Kyle.
Thank you.
The epic badass. Now I want to go watch the movie, although I can't because I have PTSD.
Well, I'll summarize it for you. Oh, wait, I just did. But I love that he's Texan, too.
Yeah, Midlothian, the bro.
Yeah, West Texas, where everybody's rushing to.
Yeah, but there's a West Texas and there's a West, Texas. It's very confusing.
West, Texas has really good kolaches. I don't think that's a big tourism spot, but it is for us
now
here.
Now I'm hungry.
Yeah, you want a kolache?
Yeah, but I have to take the meat out. I have meat issues.
Okay. Everybody needs to write in and tell Jen what's going on. Doesn't eat meat. We're in Texas. We smoke meat for breakfast.
No, you smoke meat for breakfast.
Brisket.
I ate some almonds and some berries.
All right. Well, it's good seeing you, Jen. I don't even know what to say to that.
All right. Well, thanks for listening and keep following us. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.